Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Shelf here at Blog Talk Radio for Saturday, September the 5th, 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, the author of the new book, Long Walk Up, coming to you from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today, I'm honored to bring Valerie Coleman. She is a fascinating go-getter, really, in the literary world, just continuing to move forward. I met her years ago, and she is truly, truly continuing to grow. She's the editor and the founder of the Penn Literary Writer Series, where she offers many things for writers that our listeners can benefit from. So to begin, welcome, Valerie.
Hey, Denise. Thank you for having me.
It's an honor to have you. I was doing research last night to get more detail for our interview. I mean, our paths have crossed before, but I was even made more aware of what you've done and even more fascination for the work that you do. So to begin, if you could just tell us, you do so many things, if you could just tell us about some of the writers' conferences that you organize and operate.
Well, through my company, Pen of the Writer, I do two conferences a year. The write-on workshop I hold the last Saturday in March in Dayton, Ohio, and myself, Wendy Hart Beckman, and then Earth Jallo are the three speakers. And then in October, which is my next upcoming conference, October 2nd and 3rd this year, is the Pen to Paper Literary Symposium. And with the Pen to Paper Symposium, I actually bring in other speakers, including an attorney. I have an attorney this year, Carl Lewis, who's an arts and entertainment attorney. I have Earth Jallo again, who's a publicist. She's worked with Les Brown, Joylynn Jostle, several other well-known authors and speakers. And I have Wendy Hart Beckman, who is my editor, coming in and speaking. I also have a company by the name of ComTactics, who's going to talk about writing and how to make money off the Internet, using the Internet and some of the features that are available online so that your website really can make money for you.
That's
Kelly Robinson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, C. Kelly Robinson, Essence Bestseller, is also one of my speakers, and have a speaker on poetry, a speaker on fiction, nonfiction. I have a lot of different people doing a lot of different things.
I know you really, really covered a broad range of things for writers and for readers. How did you get started? Did you start in the literary world as a writer yourself, or did you get started more from the business side and the marketing side with the workshops?
I came in actually about a few years ago. It's been a while. A friend of mine was writing her first book, and she gave me her manuscript and wanted to know my feedback. You know, so I read through it, and I thought, oh, I liked it, but I would change this, I would change that, I would do this, I would do that. And I took my little red pen out, and I just started marking. She's like, girl, you'll be great as an editor. I'm like, editor? And eventually, as time progressed, when her book finally came to be published, she brought me on and another young lady to be partners. And from there, now she's an Essence best-selling author. We're no longer in partnership together. She has about five or six books out now. And,
wow.
Yeah, and on the Essence bestseller list on a regular basis. And from there, in working with her, because I love to teach is my thing. I love teaching. I love learning and then helping people with what I've learned. And in working with her, I realized that a lot of people didn't understand the business of writing. They were spending $150 to have their book copywritten, when then it was only $30. They could have done it themselves for $30. They paid this person $150 to do it.
Wow.
You know, they didn't have their barcodes, their ISBNs, their EANs, the Library of Congress, all the fundamental things you need to effectively market your book on a national level. They didn't have that. You know, inferior covers, typesetting, typos. So I was like, wow, they really need to understand the business. Everybody, you know, wants to tell a story, but can you tell it so that it's marketable?
Right, right.
That's when I came on board.
That's a good point. And I was going to ask you why you created the conferences, but it sounds like you said you love to teach, and you saw a need to help writers particularly up-and-coming writers, so they don't, I guess they aren't taken advantage of by people who are, you know, in the book business, you know, strictly to make money and not really for an appreciation of the art. So I was going to ask you why you started the conferences. Is that the reason you wanted to help authors, you know, to make sure they work with reputable literary agents and editors and publicists and that they don't spend these exorbitant amount of monies for something that they could have got for maybe less than half that price?
Exactly. What I do is I provide resources. You know, I give them a list of reputable printers. Not all the printers out there are truly printers on behalf, you know, of the author. So I give them a list of reputable resources. I tell them a whole book process, how to compile the book, how to promote the book, how to make sure it's cost effective. My degree is in engineering. And so I want to make sure that, okay, you got this book out. Is it a quality book? And did you price it well enough? And will you be profitable in the way you've priced it? And a lot of that, just like the automotive industry, the book business is a competitive industry. There are millions of books out there.
Mm-hmm.
But just because it cost you $20 a book to put your book together because you didn't know what you were doing, that doesn't mean you can now sell your book for $30 when it should be selling for $12.99.
Right.
It's going to be a hard sale.
Mm-hmm.
So just like the automotive industry, you can no longer determine the price just by what I want it to be. The price should be set on what the industry standard is, which means that forces you as an author or the publisher to make sure then that you can get your book produced at a cost low enough that you can still make a profit.
That is correct. I've heard people say that if you are going to self-publish, to make sure that you keep the cost low enough so that you could triple or quadruple the price of the book to cover your marketing expenses and you know, other expenses, mailing and shipping expenses that you have. A good thing, and I'm listening to you. You are also you also create works, and I want to talk about some of the books you've done, been an editor over, and some of the anthologies and the columns that you write. So you also wear that hat, but then too, I can clearly hear in your responses that you also have a strong business acumen, which I think would help a writer, because a lot of times as artists, we see it from that artistic standpoint, and then the business side, we really don't see it from that. So it can be difficult for an artist to wear both hats. But it sounds like you have had success doing both. What I wanted to speak about next was a lot of your conferences are based out of Dayton, Ohio, which is mm-hmm. the town where I was born. So I have a special, I guess, connection there. But I know it's not one of the larger cities. It's not like Philadelphia or Miami in the United States. I wanted to ask you, how have you been able, Valerie, to make those conferences and workshops that you offer successful over the many years that you've been offering them?
Well, I can say, Denise, that a lot of the people who come to the conference actually are not from the Dayton market.
Wow.
I've had people come from as far as Seattle, Washington, Los Angeles, Orlando, Florida, come up to Dayton for the conference.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess Dayton kind of feels like, well, she's here, we can get to her all the time. Which is not actually the case anymore. I'm really doing a lot of moving around. But but the success, to me, I think the success comes in because I don't have large conferences. When I say not large, I probably have, you know, somewhere between 25 to 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, don't get me wrong. If I had a million people show up at my conference, I would gladly receive them all. But I like the smaller size because there's the intimacy there. Then, you know, we have room to ask questions and provide answers without having to say, well, we're running out of time or we can't take all the questions. So that helps that way. But for me, I think I gain a lot of I get a lot of intrinsic reward out of just knowing that I've helped an author learn something more about the business or save somebody money. Just this morning, a lady from Florida called. She's working with a group of women, and they want to publish their book, and they're talking about going through some what I would call not so reputable or reliable print-on-demand companies. And so mm-hmm. I was explaining to her the difference between print-on-demand and self-publishing because they are not one and the same.
No.
So that, you know, she can make an informed decision. That's my thing. If you can make an informed decision, then you have a better chance of doing something right.
Right.
And doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you don't know all the information and you just go off of emotion or, like you said, the artist, I just want to get it out there without really considering what the cost, counting up the cost,
right.
Then you end up in the long run disgruntled or disappointed or frustrated because the book that you thought you'd be able to buy and sell for $15 now costs you $25 to buy.
Yes, yes. I have been at events where I've heard authors say they spent $10,000 to print maybe 100 copies of a book, and I was like, oh, just blown away. And again, I think it's good that people like you are there to let people know, oh, wait a minute, this is not like that. You didn't get a good deal. This is not the norm, because as an artist, you just want to share your work.
Right.
And a lot of times people overlook. The first person that says, yeah, I'll print your book. Yeah, I'll be your literary agent. Yeah, I'll be your publicist. You know, a lot of artists off and running. And then later, not only in the book industry, in the music industry, I've seen that as well.
Goodness.
People are like, wow, I got a really raw deal, and you're 5 years into it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and that's two more years to go.
They don't, they don't read the agreement. They don't get an attorney. Well, I don't need to pay an attorney. And especially in the music business, you can't understand all that mumble jumble and all the rules that they have when it comes to free goods and royalties and advances and recouping and options. And, if you don't understand that terminology, publishing, you don't know that stuff, and you can literally sign your life away, your future earnings.
Yes,
and you have to be careful with that.
Yeah, for the length of that contract, that is so true. Your book, I want to talk about blended families. It speaks to a topic. I know you were the editor for this anthology, but it speaks to a topic that is impacting a lot of families, not only here in the U.S. but around the world. And it's like bringing two families together, step families. And I experienced that as a child. In my situation with my stepmother, it didn't really work out so well, but. Sometimes it does work. I know it takes work to work out. You meet somebody, you're in love, and they've got three kids, you've got three kids, and now you've got to try to bring this together and make it work. So did you create – the first question I wanted to ask you about the anthology is, did you create this based on personal experiences so our listeners know, you personally know what this book is about? You've had these experiences yourself.
Most definitely. Actually, the reason why I wrote the book – well, first let me say – my husband, when I married my husband, he had three kids. I had two. We were not the Brady Bunch. Not. And what I found was, you mentioned your stepmother. The stepmother-stepdaughter relationship is the most difficult relationship to forge because of the allegiance the daughter has to her mother, because of the catty ways women treat each other and the things that we do, those little overt little things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, that's the most difficult relationship to forge. And when I married my husband, he had two sons and a daughter. And his daughter has been the struggle throughout our relationship, she and I. We have a hard time getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, now she's grown now. When we first married, she was 8 years old. I actually wrote the book because I had reached a point where I was tired of having to be the adult in this situation and still having to put up with disrespect, and intentional maliciousness. And I'm like, I don't tolerate that out of anyone, especially not a child that I'm helping to take care of.
Right.
I got a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so things just kept culminating. Nothing really got resolved. And 12 years into the marriage, I was ready to walk away.
Okay.
And I just had enough. And I called a girlfriend and I told her, if you don't pray with me right now, I'm leaving. And I believe she thought I was playing until I revved the car engine in the cell phone. She said, uh-oh. I said, I'm in the driveway and I'm on my way out.
Wow.
But because of her being a stepmother, too, and understanding what I had been through, she was able then to relate and speak to me on that level. So, yes, I am a part of an actual step family, blended family. And I finally got to the point where I was like, I'm either going to write a book or I'm going to go to jail. Because at that point, Denise, I was ready to fight. I'm going to fight somebody. It's going to be my husband. It's going to be his ex-wife. His daughter by that time was grown. It's going to be somebody. And I can't fight, but I was ready to fight. I said, let me write this book. I'm going to end up in the jail or in the hospital.
So it was like a work even of healing for you. And you have stories in there from other authors, correct?
Yes, that is the reason why I did that. Let me say this. Do you watch The Real Housewives of Atlanta?
I've heard of it. I've not watched it, but I've heard of it.
Candy Burns, she's the newest housewife on there. She's scheduled to. She's engaged to a young man that has six children, and she has, I believe, one daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she recently got the book and read it and absolutely loved it.
Okay.
Because the stories in there, what I did intentionally was I took a plethora of stories from a lot of different people to get different perspectives.
Right.
My situation was awful and still is. You know, 15 years into the marriage, we still have struggles. Now we have grandbabies involved.
Okay.
So it hasn't gotten any better as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But what I did was I wanted to get it from other people's perspectives. I didn't just want to look at it from where I sat, because from where I sat, it was tainted. This is awful. Don't do it. Run, you know. And I don't want everybody to have that feeling.
Right.
So I got stories from men. I got stories from women. I got stories from people when they were children, how they felt as a child in the relationship. I got stories from biological parents, step-parents. I got stories from adoptive, a mother who adopted, a mother who was a foster parent. I had stories in there from a clinical family therapist, family counselor, yeah. So I had stories from, you know, the whole gamut, and what ended up happening was it gives a wide perspective. So now you can sit back and look at it from, you know, as a stepmother now, one of the stories in there, I can look at it from a stepdaughter's perspective and be like, wow, you know, I never realized that's how she felt. I was so busy in my own pain,
okay,
in my own world, I didn't think about it from her perspective.
Okay.
And
very
yeah,
interesting. Very interesting. I wanted to ask you then, with all these stories coming together, what are some of the, and I'm sure you've heard from readers who even shared even more stories since the book was published, but in the title of the book to our listeners again is Blended Families, which is available at Valerie's website. Valerie, can you give us your website URL, please?
It's pen, P-E-N, of the writer.com.
Okay, penofthewriter.com and at amazon.com. But I wanted to ask you for blended families. What are some of the particular challenges that blended families face that are talked about in the book, and things that you just other readers have told you? What are some, you know, specific challenges they face that families that are not blended don't face?
Right. Well, right. Specific to step families, I think the biggest thing that is specific, well, some of the major things that are specific to step families are the basic, how do you raise a child? It's different when it's just, if it's my husband and I, you know, there's going to be battles with our biological child.
Mm-hmm.
But now when you bring in his child biologically, and I have different expectations for children. I have a thing about being disrespectful. I have a thing about cleanliness. I have a thing about homework. You know, those are the things I instilled in my children.
Mm-hmm.
And if his children come in and they were raised different, maybe homework is not as important, or being respectful is not an issue in our home, we can talk to our mother any kind of way. When you have those variances in parenting, now you have this child who is used to being raised a certain way all this time coming in, you've got a different dynamic. How do you handle that?
Okay.
Visitation can be an issue.
Okay.
You know, we have different rules in the house. We have different house rules. How do you handle those house rules? Another issue that I think a lot of, or some of the stories dealt with, was discipline. Okay, we have these rules. How do you discipline? Well, I spank. Well, I don't spank.
Okay,
you
yeah.
know, I take away. Well, I don't take away.
Okay.
Well, I do, well, we don't do it like that.
Okay.
You know, and those are like, they sound superficial, but when you get into a heart of it, what it really gets into is, I don't know my place in this family anymore.
Okay.
Now that I'm no longer daddy's little girl, you have this other woman. I don't know where my place is, and then little things start happening.
Okay. Yeah, it can. It can, from personal experience on my end. It is a challenge. And again, you come to love this adult that you're having a romantic relationship with, and that's the next thing I wanted to, before we go and talk about some other works that you're doing. I wanted to say to our listeners, because I see so many people dealing with this, and I think even Steve Harvey in his book, it's almost like he's trying to shake people to get them. For some reason, we want to believe in this fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get romantically involved. But why do you think so many of us, it could be unhealed parts of us, continue to believe in these, that the relationship doesn't take work, that it's like going to be a fairy tale. And then when reality sets in, we just take off, you know, for the road. Why do you think people still continue to believe that everything's just going to be smooth and easy and not take work?
I think part of when you said fairy tale, I believe that's a lot of it, and they live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this issue, and then for the rest of our lives, we're happily ever after. Or when you watch the movies, typically the movies want to leave you on a high note, they lived happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
So we're bombarded with all these visions and delusions of grandeur, you know, that never really come to fruition, because anything that's worth having is going to be worth fighting for. It's going to take a struggle.
Yes.
Even if you have two people who are soulmates, born to be together. There's still going to be a variation. Just because I love you with all my heart doesn't mean my children are going to love you. They might not like you.
Right.
But now I put my children into a situation, nothing that they asked me to do, but now I put them in a situation because I've fallen in love with this man or this man has fallen in love with me. Now we are trying to force our children into a mold that they didn't ask for.
That's true.
And we expect them to make it fit. These are kids.
I think that's Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so I believe that we just, and I think we are not, people, what I'm finding, you know, as I grow older, people are not really realists. They don't really think, again, counting up the cost. They don't really sit down and weigh the options, you know, look at the potential outcomes, and then make a fair assessment as to whether do I really want to marry this person? Did I check out his credit? What about his criminal history? You know, is he crazy? Is he cuckoo? What about his family? The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Because if his daddy did it, he might do it.
Oh, you can
know?
Say that again and again.
Look, I know it. And you have to think, will he go to work? Okay, he's working out. Is he going to quit on me? Am I willing to work if he doesn't work?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know where that fairy tale comes. I think movies, again, as you said, play a role. But for some reason, we just believe that for us, it's just going to be different than it has been for anybody else. And I don't know where we get these thoughts from. And then when reality sets in, it's like we got punched in the face.
I think part of it, right. I think part of it, too, is we're not astute enough to really watch the dynamics of marriage. Even with mothers and fathers, if you don't see them actually having conflict, you know, you always talk to take your conflict away from the children. Don't involve them in adult situations.
Mm-hmm.
That's really kind of unfair to the kids. Because if all they see is you happy-go-lucky and woo-woo-woo, everything's great with mom and dad, and then all of a sudden there's a divorce, they don't understand.
Right.
You know, and so I think at some point now when the child is, you know, able to handle that, they should see that there is some conflict. But here's how we resolve it.
Yeah.
You go behind closed doors, have a fight, go behind closed doors and resolve it. The children never see the resolution. They never see the conflict. And so we grow up believing mom and daddy are happy, kiss, kiss, kiss all the time.
That's an excellent, excellent, excellent point. At some age, you know, for your children, I think they pick up on the vibe of it anyway, even if we try to hide it. But I think it is good to see them, for children to see, you know, healthy parents work, because that's a part of life. If people don't agree with each other all the time. I think those are very, very good points that you made, and I'm sure that there will be listeners who may tune into our show or as long as it's up here on the station, which will be for months to come, who will... They may be in a situation, and this might be what something you said might resonate with them, and it might be just what they need at that time in their life. So I thank you for sharing that. And then again, as I was saying, you are doing so much. I was on your website last night. I'm like, oh my goodness!
And I got more stuff coming. I have my website is being revamped. So the site that is up now is still live, but in the next couple of weeks, and I hold much more stuff.
Oh, my goodness. And you are a very beautiful woman. You look so young and full of energy. I'm like, she must be just loaded with energy. You must take a lot of vitamins or something. You just keep going. And you, other than you do your workshops, you do your conferences, you're an editor, you do the blended families, and on top of your engineering degree, which is not an easy thing to get, you also contributed to Successful Step Families, a periodical. How can our listeners get a copy of, and there's some other columns that you write for, but a copy of the Successful Step Families? And also then after you tell us that, I wanted to ask you what your story, His Number One Girl, is about.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Successful Step Families, that was published through Ron Deals. He is like the guru, I guess you would say, of step families in the Christian kingdom, because, you know, there are different principles play in role when you start talking about biblical principles when it deals with step families.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a clinical, has a doctor's degree in family therapy, family counseling. And so he is a Christian counselor, and he travels the nation. And he allowed me to include my story in one of his newsletters. And I'm not really sure how you can get that except to Google Ron, D-E-A-L, deal. His book is Successful Step Families, and so that's probably the name of his newsletter as well. And you can Google him and find it that way. So the story that I wrote for that, His Number One Girl, was a result of a situation that occurred with my husband for years. You know, his daughter and I, not that I was in competition with her, but she felt in competition with me again because she didn't know where her place was.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, of years of having several situations arise, this particular day we had the family over. We were just sitting back watching TV. I think I was in the kitchen. And his daughter, was trying one of her efforts to get her daddy's attention. And she said, "Daddy, aren't I your number one girl?" Now, as the wife, I knew, and as a woman, I knew what she was asking him.
Yes.
His reply was, "Yes, baby, you're my number one girl, but Val is my number one lady." And to me, that was unacceptable. Because I knew, as a female, I knew what she was getting at. She wasn't distinguishing between girl and lady. She meant female, woman, man with a womb. That's what she was talking about.
Right.
The people in this house that have a womb are not the number one to you.
Mm-hmm.
And his response, although actually I was upset because my thing was, here was an opportunity for you to validate me as your wife. And he did that, but I didn't see it as such because, again, I was so consumed with my,
right.
I know she ain't going there again, I'm so tired of this,
feeling
myself, I guess, that I didn't realize that at that point he validated me. But in putting the book together, Blended Step Families, Blended Families, I was talking to the clinical therapist, Brenda McKinney, because she actually did a story in there. Well, what she did was she took a story, a fictional story, and she dissected it from a clinical perspective and put terminology and explanation to the different things that were happening to give life to the dynamics of that particular story, which was great. I get a lot of great feedback from that.
Wow.
And I was sitting down talking to her about my situation, and interviewing her for this other story. She's like, "Oh, that was the best answer you could have given." I said, "Excuse me? That was the best answer because in so doing, saying what he said, he validated her and he validated you."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Really?" Because I really felt slighted. She said, "Oh, no. What he did was, she said, that was the best answer you could have given." I'm like, guess I owe him an apology. I was mad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was the reason why I wrote that story.
His number one girl. Do you tell this story from the daughter's point of view or from the mother's point of view?
I tell it from my point of view.
Okay.
There are no stories in there from his children's point of view because at the time I published the book, for one, they were still too young, and for two, there was still tension there. So
okay.
To even proposition them or propose to them a story, I wouldn't even want to read it.
Okay.
I probably called everything but a child of the king.
Now your relationship with his son sounds, and this is not to speak to you personally, but have you found that step parents have a better relationship with a child of a gender that's opposite theirs? Have you found that to be the case or no?
Well, not necessarily necessarily because of the opposite gender. For me, I raised both of my children were boys. And me being an engineer and being logical, I don't do all that emotional stuff. That doesn't work well with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me personally, I get along better with men and boys. So I think that was part of adding to that then, the fact that women have the cattiness and the stepmother-stepdaughter relationship is the most difficult because of the loyalty to the daughter, to her biological mother. Adding all that in and then me not being a quote-unquote typical woman from the, that's not me. I'm more on the logical. I'm more like the Spock, live long and prosper.
Right.
Does that make sense? Okay, you're getting emotional now. Let's talk about the facts.
Okay.
When you roll all that in and then all the other things and then what she was going through, it was a mess.
Okay. That gives more clarity for just then in the personality differences.
Mm-hmm.
I'm for our listeners who may be going through a similar situation. You're also a columnist for Jubilee Magazine and Keeping Family First, and this is particularly for our listeners who are newer writers. How did you land those columns? It's sometimes difficult to get in print as a writer, and what can new writers, Valerie, do to get those first assignments as a regularly published writer in a newspaper, a magazine or a newsletter?
Well, for me, the Jubilee Magazine was a referral. I forget, someone told the publisher that I could help him. Actually, he initially brought me on board to help him do some marketing and find some contacts and stuff. And once we got talking, and he Googled me and saw that I did books and everything, well, can you do stories in there? So that's how that came along. And I think he only went to print once. Finding out the magazine business is very costly, very competitive, just like the book industry, and very time-consuming. So far he's only done one magazine in print. He went to go do it then online.
Okay.
And the Keeping Family First was also a referral. A fellow friend was telling me about the new magazine. The publisher, Anita Lane, was in the Chicken Soup for the African American Woman, so, and she started this online magazine. And so I contacted her and, you know, was talking to her about if she had a stepfamily issue. She was like, yeah, I do, actually. And she had a writer who wasn't able to write anymore, so I jumped on board. And I think I wrote for her maybe like a couple years. And
wow.
Here recently she went from the online magazine to more like a blog type thing. So it wasn't as formal as submitting the articles. You can just go in and blog something. So, and right at that point, I got so busy with my music artist that I haven't submitted anything more to her. But
so
I think for others.
You didn't go the normal route then. You didn't go, so advice to a new writer, it sounds like this sort of came to you. You didn't go the normal channel
right.
of trying to connect with an editor to get into a newspaper or a magazine.
No, and I really recommend, I mean, for a writer who wants to do that, to get into the magazine, you might want to start with, like, your local newspaper and volunteer to be a journal, you know, to be a journalist and submit certain columns in that area. You know, they'll pay a little here and there, but then it helps you to get some momentum, get some credibility. Or volunteer if you find out there's some online magazines or some startup magazines, and, you know, have your stuff together. Maybe have several articles that you can have prepared to submit to them. You might want to go that route, but you need to understand, you know, what their expectations are. What do they require? You know, some of them say 500 words, 800 words. You know, you have to meet those criteria when you do submit, give them what they want. But lots of times, another thing that writers can do to get published is to provide little snippets. Like my book was about stepfamilies, so I probably have like 50 little nuggets about stepfamily life, being a stepmother is like walking uphill in an avalanche. You know, no matter what I try to do, it don't seem like I can make any progress. Or being a stepmother is like managing a late-night convenience store, all the responsibility but none of the authority. So, you know, it's like, I don't care, you know, you expect me to do these things, but if I have to discipline, I'm not allowed to do that.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I put little nuggets like that together. If you put like a series of, you know, words, maybe 25 word bites together and submit those to various magazines, you know, specific to your, you have to target and find those magazines that are writing about what you've written about.
Mm-hmm.
And then target those along with your article submissions. And what happens is, you know, when they put those magazines in little column form, sometimes they have some extra white space that they want to fill in with something.
Mm-hmm.
And if your nugget can happen to fit, you know, you give them that nugget, you don't necessarily want to be compensated for that. You just ask them to make sure that they include your name and byline credit, which would be your website.
Right. That is that's an excellent tip, Valerie. And from all the interviews I've done, I think that's the first time I've heard somebody share that. So thank you. That is an outstanding tip for writers who are trying to get in magazines. There's a way to get to get the things that you want that are for you. So you might not take the traditional route. Valerie shared hers was a little different. But there is a way, and that was an outstanding tip. I wanted to ask you next from your experience, how much has the Internet, you know, because for writers, I want to say the Internet's, writers really been in it strong, maybe 12 years. I mean, definitely not 20 years. But from your experience, how much has the Internet opened doors for writers to be published and gain more exposure?
The Internet is is a priceless marketing tool, but let me caution any writer who thinks that the Internet is the only marketing tool. You have some people who believe, okay, I have a website or I'm on Amazon, that's all it takes. That's not true, because there are millions of websites out there. And if you don't do something special, unique, out of the ordinary to draw traffic to your website, it doesn't matter that you have a virtual store.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than having a store. You know, you may have a storefront that people can see driving on the street, but if there's no signage, if there's no promotions, if there's no radio, TV, you know, other things to pull people in, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But the Internet, you know, the e-blasts. I do e-blasts, which are a great way to build up your marketing list, build up your following, to let people feel you and know you. I'm not really a blogger and all that tweeting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting into that, you know, starting to get into that. But the social networks are a great way to meet resources, meet fellow authors, you know, to find people who could collaborate with what you're doing or share tips. So it's really great. And even as a publisher, now a lot that I can do more for people. I don't have to be in your city to work with you.
Right.
You send me your files, I can edit, send it back to you. So the whole email thing, even uploading to printers, You know, I don't have to mail a hard, you know, hard copy and a CD anymore mm-hmm. with the image on there. I can just upload it to their servers. So it expedites everything. But
right.
marketing, you have to utilize all. Internet is a great marketing tool, but don't just stop there.
No, and I agree. You have to get out and travel and go to
mm-hmm.
offline events. And also for writers, another tip is writing articles is a good way, and linking your website and the titles of your books to them is a good way to increase online exposure and offline if you're writing them for print
mm-hmm.
periodicals like newspapers and magazines. Tell us next. I want to try to cover the many things
mm-hmm.
that you deal with as we're more than halfway through our interview. But tell us about Passionate Pens. Why did you start this initiative, and how does it benefit youth?
Well, again, Passionate Pens started because I love to teach. And it initially started in 2006. I went into the prisons to teach the inmates
okay.
writing and publishing. My whole thing was, you know, well, my husband worked in a prison facility, and my whole thing was, you know, I want these guys, because they write a lot anyway, when they come out, let them have something productive, so maybe they won't rob me if they've written a best-selling book.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give them some inspiration, some encouragement.
Right.
So I went into the prison, and I've probably taught maybe close to 20 classes now in,
wow.
in our local institution. I go in there, and I'll spend several weeks with my group of students, and I initially went in just to teach them about writing.
Okay.
The first week there, they all came in with their manuscripts and MF this and what's that and da da da. And I'm like, whoa. Wait just a minute now, but we want you to read this. I don't read that.
Right.
But that's how we talk. That's not how I read. And if you want to have a more universal appeal, clean it up. If your audience is just going to be the street lit type reader, that's great.
Right.
If you want a more universal appeal, clean up your writing. And matter of fact, as a great writer, you should be able to articulate what you're trying to say without saying it.
Right.
And so, and that's what I did. I taught them those type of principles. So the next week they came back, and their stuff was over. So I said, oh, I can read that. Oh, that's great. I'm feeling that. So I just encouraged them. We talked about the synopsis. We talked about the hook page. We talked about developing characters. You know, I showed them how to set the scene. We talked about narrative, dialogue, internal thoughts. Went through all of those things with them. It was a three-week class. I met 2 hours a week for 3 weeks.
Well, I think that is
and
fast.
Okay.
And you're still doing that, is that?
I do it on occasion. Now I've run out of time, but now they are calling. They'll tell my husband, we need to see your wife. We're ready
wow.
to next class. I'm like, oh, Lord. So not that I don't like going in, because I love going in and teaching. The problem is making the time.
Yeah, because you are very busy.
It's a free, right, and it's a free service that I'm offering. There's no compensation, you know, so I'm going
mm-hmm.
in out of my own time to do that. And so then after the art class, the art of writing was done, they were like, okay, what's next? I said, well, what's next? What's next is a business. Well, when are you coming back? Well, when am I coming back? I'm done. No, you got to come back. Oh. So I came back maybe a month or so later, taught them the business of writing, where I got into how to price your book, you know, what's effective when it comes to page count, you know, even looking at the signatures. You want to stay around signatures of 32 pages because it's more feasibly and it's more economical. Talked about book print trim size. You know, you want to do a super small or a super big book because you want yours to look different. You're going to cost yourself a whole bunch of money.
Right.
You're going to run into problems with placement on bookshelves and shipping costs if it's extra large
mm-hmm.
and then pricing it. So stay within the standard. Don't reinvent the wheel. That wheel is working.
Mm-hmm.
So I taught them basic principles about establishing a publishing company, copyright, LLC, the EAN, ISBN. You know, I went into all those types of things.
Wow.
That was a three-week class.
Wow, I know, oh my goodness, that they really, really appreciate it. You maybe one day you'll see one of their books out here and your name will be in there thanking you and you go, wow.
Well, what has happened actually, because of those inmates and because of the high school students that I wanted to teach, they started pulling on me. Well, Ms. Val, we want to be in a book. I'm like, I'm not trying to do a, you know, another anthology, you know, it's time consuming, it's costly, I just want to teach you. Well, to them that wasn't good enough. They're like, you started this, now you finish it. Oh.
Okay.
So then I published my second book, Tainted Mirror, an anthology. And that book, it focuses around those things that keep us from reaching our potential.
Oh.
Something somebody said, something someone did, our substance abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, something from our childhood, something in our adulthood, whatever that thing is that keeps you from going to the next level, pursuing your dreams, advancing forward. And so the inmates wrote about their lives before they got incarcerated, once they got incarcerated, and now they're view on life now. My students wrote fictional accounts which are phenomenal. And so three of the inmates that I taught actually have stories in the book, as well as inmates from across the, most of them came from the state of Ohio.
Okay.
And but there are also stories in there on overcoming all kinds of things. One lady wrote about overcoming verbal abuse. She was as verbally abusive to everyone in her on her job. She just couldn't advance because her attitude was nasty. And she just couldn't figure out, why am I like this? She got to the point where I don't like how I am. Why am I like this?
Mm-hmm.
And she went back and started talking to family members and found out that it came from her grandmother.
Oh.
And how her grandmother treated her mother and how her mother treated her. And she said, it stopped here. So she made a conscious effort to break that cycle.
Wow, that is really a good thing.
Phenomenal. Yeah, the stories really are intense. They make you laugh. They make you cry. They make you think. They make you reflect. And the inmates now, they are promoting the book to their family and friends. They're selling it in the prison. Who would have thought?
Yeah, oh, my goodness. Now, that is awesome. And this is at your website as well, penofthewriter.com?
Yes. The passion pen.
Okay, penofthewriter.com. That is, and the what we think of ourselves tends to be how we align our behavior, even
mm-hmm.
if what we think was given to us. But you said, like teaching, somebody gave us the wrong lesson. Then that can impact us negatively, and some people for the rest of our lives, unfortunately.
Right.
I wanted to ask you next, what is the World Movement Evolution Tour, and what a name.
Girl, you have been on my side, haven't you?
Yes, I
am not mad at you, Denise. That's what I'm talking about. You got somebody who interviews you, and they know it's you. Girl, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. But the World Movement Evolution Tour. Okay, in 2007, I was working at Delphi. My plant closed, and as a result, I took this journey now to become a person who helped promote other authors and artists. So in 2007, I was invited to be on board with the Christopher Entertainment Group, gospel group. The Tired video is playing. The video, the name of it is Tired, plays on BET, Gospel Music Channel, The Word Network. So they're getting major airtime. They just got back from Bobby Jones. And in working with them, I love to collaborate with other people. I love to teach and I love to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So working with the Christopher Group, myself, the Christopher Group, Tanya Baker, who just got back from Europe, New Harvest, who are a 3-time Dove Award nominee,
yeah.
and the Hebrew Children, who was a gospel sibling group, award-winning gospel sibling group, all based out of Dayton, Ohio. We pulled our efforts, and we said, let's put on a concert.
Mm-hmm.
And we named the concert the World Movement Evolution Tour. And what we did was we pulled our financial resources, we pulled our fan base resources, we pulled our connections in media and you know, band and whatever, and we collectively, the four artists and then myself, and we put on this concert that brought in 900 people. The church sat 900. We probably had 920 in there.
Wow.
So the pastor was like, we've never had, this church has never been filled to capacity.
Wow.
We filled it to capacity. We put on an excellent concert. We started on time, and we were out of there. And, like, we had four artists do a half an hour apiece. We gave away items. It was just a great event, and we were done in, like, 2.5 hours because I'm a stickler for time.
Okay.
You know, so it was a great concert, and now we're doing a similar concert again this year, October 17th, as a fundraising benefit for churches. So what I do now is what it did was it set the platform for us to now go in and position ourselves to do fundraising benefits or concerts in different venues. Now we submit I submit the proposal, and then they agree upon the proposal, we come in and we do our concert.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do now. It's those three artists, Tanya Baker, Christopher, and the Hebrew Children, and I also, with my talent agency, Prose, Rhythm, and Praise, I have comedians, queen comedians, dancers, mime, song producers, songwriters, and so now I'm taking this whole collective of artists, and I'm setting opportunities for them to either have their songs placed on other items or other projects. I'm getting them gigs, you know, just getting them out there, getting them TV, publicity, promotions, but pulling all these people together and now taking it almost like a concert on the road type thing.
Wow. You mentioned something, and we've got about 15 minutes left, but you mentioned something. You said you got laid off from Delphi, and I know that a lot of people work there in Dayton, but I wanted to ask you, is that when you started finding yourself moving more toward being like an independent worker, a self-employed worker, were you really scrambling to get back into the corporate world, or is that when you started moving and saying, you know what, I can make earn a living doing what I love on my own. I only need to work with another major big company. Is that, did that layoff, in a way, a lot of people see a layoff, and a lot of people are laid off, and many of our listeners might be, but just there could be a positive in that as well. Did that start to steer you? Do you think you'd be where you are now if you didn't get laid off?
And the answer to that is no, I would not be where I am now. Now, prior to me being laid off, I was already working on the publishing business because I had started officially Pen of the Writer started in 2006, although I had been working on it for about 3 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
So I was already in the process of doing my own books. I had finished my first book by that point, and I started working on the second. But the what it was for me, and one of my girlfriends said, the only reason why God is closing that particular Delphi plant is because he's trying to get to you. He's got more for you to do.
Wow.
I'm like, that is so awful of him to make all those people lose their jobs, but if he wants to get to me, then here I am. But isn't that something? But what happened was it pushed me because I didn't really realize how much value I got out of working. I am a workaholic. I love to work. I didn't really realize how much value I got out of working until Delphi was gone. But I refused to be in a position again where another company can lay me off.
Yes.
So as a result, I mean, I made great money as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I lived very well.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, though, I made a decision that I'm going to put 5 good years into working my business on my own.
Okay.
If I can get this thing to take off so that I am self-sufficient. My goal now is to make 6 figures in the next 2 years because I've been at it for almost 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So to make 6 figures, by the time I'm into my 5th year, which will be in 2012, I want to be making 6 figures.
Okay.
And if I'm at least making, you know, comparable to my earnings at Delphi, then I'll keep it going because there's going to come a point where I'm like, okay, I'm spinning my wheels here.
Right.
But I have positioned myself now in the literary industry and also in the music industry now where people are starting to come to me and inviting me to come in and be a speaker on this ticket. I just got a call the other day to be a speaker at a mayoral candidate's fundraising benefit.
Okay.
What am I going to talk about? I'll find something.
You'll do fine, Valerie.
I sure will. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to make that work. Yeah, and so that's what's happening now, but it took time to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I say to anyone, you know, if layoffs are pending or you know, on their way, don't wait until you're laid off to figure out what am I going to do.
Okay.
I would say in, like, 2005, what really did it for me was when my boys, because I poured all I had into them until they were grown and gone, families of their own. But I came a point in my life, I say it was about 2005, when I didn't, the mother part of me, I felt the journey was ending.
Okay.
You know, I know you're a mother forever, but not in the same nurturing
with
my baby, you know, way. And so I began to seek the Lord then. What is it that you want me to do? What am I supposed to be doing? What is the purpose of my life? I think women, maybe men too, go through this, you know, midlife range. Well, I probably live half my life. What should I be doing? What am I supposed to finish up here?
Yeah.
And I went through that, and so I knew out of that my purpose was to help people get their books published.
Okay.
I knew that out of there. So that was already coming long before Delphi, you know, closed the doors. So I was working towards those type of things. Once they closed the doors, then I was able to go full force. What I found was I was putting in a lot more time than I ever put at Delphi, and I guarantee you making a whole lot less money.
Wow.
Because it was what I loved to do and it was my passion. I would stay up till 2, 3 in the morning, get back up at 6 because my head was going, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And I did that for probably like the first year and a half I was off, you know, when I was self-employed,
I do say, and I know another, Ola Jackson, who owns Onyx Woman, television, radio. She does conferences as well and a magazine. She said she really, really hustles as well, and she's been doing this for several years. But you made a good point. I think to our listeners, when you see that you think you might be potentially laid off, I think it's good advice to begin to think about what your next move is going to be. That way it won't be such a shock and you won't feel like you're not going to make it just because you don't have this job. I think that is a good good move. I wanted to ask you, because you're now involved in the music industry and in the book industry, what are some of the similarities that you've seen between music and the book industries, where your experience in the book industry has helped you as well as you're moving over toward the music side?
Well, I think something you had mentioned before is the fact that artists, which authors are artists, are so focused on the creative process that they don't really garner the knowledge on the business side.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of artists approach me and they want me to work with them on the management side, or they want me to do different things for them. And when I say, well, is your publishing company set up? Have you copywritten your music? Are you set up with BMI or ASCAP?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is your music genre? How are you positioned? What does your music sound like? Nothing like you've ever heard. Well, then I can't position you.
Right.
Because if nobody's ever heard it, I don't know where to put you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they don't have the basic fundamental things. Or can you get me some gigs? Okay, sure, let me see your bio. I don't have a bio. Okay, what about your YouTube? What do you have on YouTube? I have nothing on YouTube. Okay, do you have product? No. I can't get you into church.
Right.
I can't call a pastor and say, I have absolutely nothing on this artist, will you let them into your house?
Yeah. And I think the artist, again, it's and that's a delicate, because I think if the artist starts to think too much about the business side,
mm-hmm.
their art could suffer. And then if they don't think about the business side, they could find themselves in either bad business deals
mm-hmm.
or where their art doesn't seem to take off, where they can earn a living
mm-hmm.
from it. So it's kind of really a catch-22.
It is a catch-22, but if you're going to be a business person, and as an artist or an author, you are a business person. It's just
mm-hmm.
that you are the product. As an artist, you are the product.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to be a business person, you need to at least understand the business. Know enough about it to know that I don't know enough to sign this contract without letting my attorney look at it. If you don't know anything else, or I don't know enough about this accounting to try to handle this, I need to let somebody else handle this.
Mm-hmm. That
because
is excellent
you can't
advice.
Do it all. Yeah.
And learn something yourself, though, as far as the accounting and the contracts, because you don't want to sign a bad deal. So I think it is pertinent that the artist learn something about it rather than putting 100% trust into another person who may do right for 5 years, and then the last 10 years of your relationship, they just start doing wrong. People sometimes don't stay on the right path. So I think you should learn, the artist learn about the business some on all aspects on their own. It just makes, I think, for a better career all the way around. And I wanted to ask you, I know you see you also offer promotional packages as we're coming down to about the last 8 minutes, but what are some of the promotional packages that Pen of the Writer offers to writers or to musicians, and what sets these packages apart, Valerie, from the others that are on the Internet and also off the Internet?
Well, some of the things that I offer are basic packages, like I'll develop media kits. I'll develop your, for artists, music artists, I'll do their dressing room writer and their technical writers, which are components that they need if they're going to be doing a bunch of what we coin as gigs. You know, they're going to be out there, and you've got travel. You need to have your travel documents together.
Mm-hmm.
And the technical writer gets to do with their band, what are their sound requirements. You know, as an author, you don't need a technical writer, but as a music artist, you need to know what are your microphone requirements, monitor, speakers, you know, what type of systems you require to play your music. Is your music on iPod? Can
mm-hmm.
they play at the church's iPod? Can they play your music, or you just the soundtrack? You know, we've gone to churches where they had a little video box. We asked if you got a sound system, yep, and they got a little box and put the microphone in front of it.
Okay.
Well, if it doesn't project it to the speakers and the artist can't hear the music, they can't sing to it, you know, those type of things. So I offer stuff like that. When it comes to promotional, I offer promotional postcards, posters, banners, flyers. You know, if you're having a book signing event, you need posters to put up. We get those type of things. And one of the new things that I'm about to start doing is videos online, where I'm going to be doing videos for, like, authors, you know, like, mini book trailer type things that they can put.
Okay.
If you're going to have a website, it needs to be visual,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I'm setting up some visual things for artists, on their music artists and authors to put on their website. I'm working with, I've collaborated with several magazines online and print to offer discounted services where, you know, you can go straight to them and it'll cost you this amount if you come through me.
Okay.
Because of my relationship with them,
right.
we're offering discounted advertisements or ad mm-hmm. space, you know, some media releases. One of my partners offers media releases where they've lasted to 700, they have 700 media contacts that they've lasted up to. I have music producers who are offering for songwriters or artists who are looking for music, they're offering mixing and mastering promotions, or they're offering, you know, songwriting promotions. So it's just a lot of different things. Email blasts, you know, I offer that.
And you do very good. I wanted to ask you, do you design those media blasts, and we're coming down to the last few minutes, but do you
mm-hmm.
design those media blasts yourself? Because to our listeners, Valerie does very, very good media blasts. Do you design those yourself, or do you go outside to have somebody?
I design them. I go outside. That's money.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I do those myself. Yes, indeedy.
Okay.
I mean, you have to, you know, and I think that's the thing for me. My inmates are asking me, when's your book coming out, Ms. Val? When's your book coming out? I don't have time to write. Are you serious? I'm too busy helping you guys and everybody else.
Okay.
So I love, you know, I love helping people and getting the word out there. And so in doing that, I have to become creative and resourceful, you know, in how I market and some of the things I do. But, yeah, I do those e-blasts myself.
Oh, my goodness. And they are so professionally done. And I say that to our listeners, many of who might have received a media blast from Valley and many who might not have, but they are so professionally done that I would highly recommend working with you. So if somebody wanted to contact you as a writer or a musician to take advantage of the promotional packages, they would just go to pinofthewriter.com. It's that simple. Is there a form they fill out? They just email you, and then you get back to them?
Yeah, it depends on what it is they're looking for. Some of the forms, some of the services that I offer, they'll be able to just point and click and do it right there on the website, depending upon what it is. But, yeah, they can email me. My email is info@pinofthewriter.com. I recommend putting, like, Pen of the Writer Services or POWER, P-O-W-E-R, which is an acronym for Pen of the Writer, in the subject line, because I get tons of emails, and that way if it ends up in my spam box, I'll find that power. I'll see the word power in the subject line. Or they can call me. My number is 937-307-0760, and I can, you know, give them information about some of my services. QueenVPublishing.net, which is my company where I publish books for other clients. I've got about 12 books that'll be out by the end of this year.
Wow.
Where I'm publishing books for others. Yeah.
Wow, and then this is, again, we're speaking with Valerie Coleman as we begin to wrap up a phenomenal interview, a phenomenal woman. And I know Valerie when she started with the workshop, and I'm going back probably six or more years, it seems like, when she just started with her workshop. And then I noticed the media blast and that she was working with Christian gospel music artist, and then from there the work in the with the inmates, and just the many things she's doing, then the blended families, and your other book, again, the title, could you give our listeners the title of your other book?
Tainted Mirror, an anthology.
Tainted Mirror, and two powerful books, that stories not just from Valerie but from other authors who have gone through these experiences. Valerie, I wanted to ask you last question with 2 minutes left. What last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave here with our listeners at Off the Shelf?
Well, I would say to your listeners, Denise, whether they are music artists or authors, make sure that this is what you want to do. Because even though it is your love, it's a lot of work. Traditional published, self-published, independent artists, major label artists, it's still a lot of work. And if you don't have the intuitiveness, the fortitude, the commitment, the tenacity, the determination to walk through the process, then it may not be the thing for you, because it will take a lot of time. And, you know, depending upon how you do it, it's going to take a lot of financial resources. But most importantly, make sure that you understand the business and what it is you're getting into. Because there's nothing worse than getting started and then years later realizing you have an unfinished project.
That is fabulous advice. And then the tips that you gave earlier, I do encourage all of our listeners to go to Valerie Coleman's website, the author of Blended Families and Tainted Mirrors. She's at Pen of the Writer, and it's spelled as exactly the way it sounds, pinofthewriter.com. Again, Valerie Coleman, author or editor, author of the anthologies, Blended Families and Tainted Mirror. Thank you so much, Valerie, for being here with us today on Off the Shelf. Just a fabulous interview. I've done so many, and you definitely have become one of my favorites. Just a wonderful, where you shared so much, so candid, and gave so many valuable tips and advice to our listeners who can take advantage of your promotional packages, again, at pinofthewriter.com. And Valerie's interview will be up here at Off the Shelf for weeks and months to come. To our listeners, thank you for listening to Off the Shelf. Please tell your family, your friends, your colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune into us here at Blog Talk Radio. We will continue to bring you the things that you are looking for, interviews with established and best-selling and up-and-coming writers, producers, editors, agents, and others, movers and shakers in the book business. Please visit me online at www.chistell.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available at the website, which again is chistell.com, or you can request it through your local bookstore. And again, thank you so much for tuning in to Off the Shelf. Remember that you are valued, loved, and truly blessed. Hey, Val.
Hey, Denise. Thank you so much. That was a great interview.
Oh, thank you. You are fabulous. I was blown away on your web. Oh, my gosh. I was like, oh, I just kept going, oh, my gosh. And you got so much energy. You're a gorgeous woman. I'm like, wow, she is like the ever-ready battery bunny, man. Jeez. Oh, my goodness. And then the interview, you even blew me away even more. I'm like, wow, this woman is phenomenal. I will definitely be hearing your name in big places. I have no doubt about it.
Thank you so much. Thank
no
you.
Doubt
really
of, yeah, about
the
it, Valerie. Oh, my God. Keep doing your thing, girl. You're going up.
I will.
All right.
Thank you much. Have a good
okay.
one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.